Good afternoon, Tri-State. This is IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. I'm Ken, reading from the Tuesday, December 29th, 2020 edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And we begin with, at the top of the fold, nonprofit receives huge haul of haberdashery. And we have an inset picture of a lot of clothing on clothing racks, all nice and neat, some with the many with plastic bags over it. And beneath it, and, oh, we also have a person in there hiding down in the bottom. And beneath it, we have Josh Jasper with Resources Unite. Looks through one of three storage units full of suits, shirts, belts, and other business attire that were donated by a local businessman. And our article reads, hundreds of suits, ties, blazers, and socks of various colors and sizes are neatly packed inside storage lockers, ready for job seekers in need of a new outfit without the hefty price tag. In exchange for the clothing, the only requirement is that those in search of a new job agree to receive support aimed at helping them find and secure work meaningful to them. It's not just about giving someone a new suit because everyone is going to need a suit and a pair of dress pants, said Josh Jasper, executive director of Dubuque Nonprofit Resources Unite. It's also about giving people a sense of confidence, reminding people that they can do something. Greg Dardis of Dardis Communications recently donated men's clothing with a reported estimated value of more than $600,000 to Resources Unite in an effort to ensure underprivileged people in the area have everything they need as they look to enter the workforce. The clothing came from Dardis's clothing store, Dardis Clothiers, which has closed as Dardis transitions his efforts to launch the nonprofit The Dardis Foundation. Our nonprofit will be working with underprivileged young adults at the high school and college level, Dardis said. Our mission is to provide them with practical skills that they will need in the real world, such as communicating with impact, managing their brand, and being able to sell themselves. As the foundation gets started, Dardis decided to partner with Resources Unite to assist with connecting people in need to the clothes available, while also spreading the word about the skills classes the Dardis Foundation offers, as well as the services provided by Resources Unite. There are a lot of folks that we serve that need help in 4 days, Jasper said. We can help with some of that right now, but then also connect them to the foundation beyond that. Jasper said Resources Unite has worked with a job coach at Northeast Iowa Community College in the past and also has a network of employers it relies on to help connect clients to jobs in the area. For us, it is very exciting, he said. We meet with a lot of people that are struggling at getting into meaningful employment. Our plan is to not only provide people with the appropriate dress attire, but the soft skills to make sure that their resume is where it needs to be, and then helping them with more effective communication skills. Dardis Communications has focused on helping people strengthen their communication skills for about 2 decades and already works with high school students and young adults. But the foundation will be able to target low-income high school students in need of the skills required to complete college applications, interview for first-time jobs, and more. Greg Dardis's hope is to begin an annual capstone class for high school juniors that will not only supply them with clothing, but give them the confidence and skills needed to find a job. We are seeking a big gap with oral and written communication, and this would be our way to provide that training to students, he said. This ties to what we do. We have been doing that training and development for a very long time. The recent clothing donation is a challenge to business leaders in the area to step up and make a donation of their own to support the Dardis Foundation with its efforts. In return, those companies will be able to partner with the foundation to recruit the students into their own companies when they begin looking for work, Dardis said. I wanted to start off with my own skin in the game, he said. I wanted to kick off with a big donation for underprivileged folks who are struggling with unemployment. We'll continue to stay in touch with them, and the organizations that will be supporting our foundation will also be recruiting those students eventually. They can hand select the best of the best. And we have a small inset for more information. To learn more about the clothing, contact Resources Unite at josh@resourcesunite.com or 563-231-6280. To learn more about the Dardis Foundation, that's D-A-R-D-I-S, Dardis Foundation, contact info@dardis-communications.com. That was info@dardis-communications.com. Our next front page piece, county to get fewer vaccine doses than expected. Officials reported Monday that Dubuque County will receive fewer COVID-19 doses this week than expected for healthcare workers, and the start of vaccinations at local long-term care centers could be delayed slightly. County Health Department Director Patrice Lambert said the Iowa Department of Public Health informed her on Monday to expect a shipment of 400 doses of the vaccine produced by Moderna this week, but not a previously expected shipment of Pfizer vaccine as well. The State Health Department did not give Lambert a reason for the reduction this week. The Dubuque County COVID-19 Incident Management Team decided the 400 Moderna doses will go to the county's hospitals. Because we were short with our Pfizer going to our hospitals, we sent 100 to Unity Point Health Finley Hospital and 300 to Mercy One Medical Centers in Dubuque and Dyersville, Lambert told the county supervisors. Our logic behind that is with the holidays upon us, if we were to see a hospital surge, we know that they will need to utilize every staff person in the hospital to keep those patients within those walls. Dubuque County avoided such a surge following Thanksgiving, which local officials credited to county residents listening to their recommendations. But it was a grave concern for area hospitals at the time. With 400 more doses, hospitals in the county have received 2,350 doses so far. Additional doses also have been received by Crescent Community Health Center, Medical Associates Clinic, and Grand River Medical Group. The Iowa Department of Public Health has identified 4,857 qualifying health care providers in the county, and each vaccine requires that recipients receive two doses 3 or 4 weeks apart, depending on the manufacturer. From here on out, it's just play it by ear, Lambert said. When the IDPH lets us know on Monday, that's when we find out how many doses to expect. Everything hinges on the amount of the vaccine that we receive each week before we can move into the next step. She said her team is looking beyond the hospitals for future shipments of the vaccine. We have college health nurses and school nurses on our radar for vaccinations with that top healthcare priority list, Lambert said. Their school clinics are almost like operating an urgent care center. The other group already qualified in the top priority category for first vaccinations are the staff and residents of long-term care facilities. For several weeks, local health officials said they expected vaccinations at those facilities to start this week. On Monday, they said it could be this week or next. Sunnycrest Manor is the Dubuque County-owned long-term care center. Interim Director Tammy Freiberger said Monday that almost all of the facility's residents, or their families if the resident is unable to consent, have agreed to receive the vaccine when it arrives. Sunnycrest currently has 91 residents and 172 employees. We only have one resident who is teeter-tottering, leaning no, she said. We're looking at just going room to room with our team from the pharmacy. Sunnycrest has an agreement with Walgreens to administer the vaccine. Freiberger said her facility's first clinic is scheduled for January 5th. Freiberger said she has given Sunnycrest staff until Thursday, December 31st to say whether they will be vaccinated. If they're a no, I've asked for a reason, she said. That way, I can see if it's misinformation and I can follow up and educate. Freiberger said she also plans 3 sessions of the vaccination clinic with Walgreens as another way to encourage participation. So, if in session 1, a member of staff says no, there's another chance, she said. Once people see others having received it and not seeing side effects, that helps people go forth. In general, local public health officials plan an extensive public awareness campaign so county residents will know as soon as they qualify for a vaccine. Lambert said they are beginning by targeting groups that they think state or federal health officials might prioritize next to receive doses, including senior citizens. The Iowa Department of Public Health has not finalized the second group of prioritized demographics. But a draft plan included people who were at least 65 years old, especially those living in residential care facilities, assisted living programs, and elder group homes, as well as independent living facilities. So, incident management team members and partners plan to make direct contact with those facilities, as well as with primary care physicians who could reach out to their clientele. The team also plans to share information via local and national news outlets, paid advertising, social media, and even a direct mailer to every address in the county once the vaccine is available for the general public. But officials continue to note that it will be months before vaccine doses are available for the general public. And now we go to our third and final piece from the front page, and we have a large centered picture of a man, gloves on, and working clearly on a deer skin or hide or something. And I would say he's a taxidermist, given all the mounts that I see behind him. And beneath it, it reads, owner Brandon Post works to cape a deer on Wednesday at Post Taxidermy in Dubuque. Our article, taxidermists turn hunting stories into works of art. Brandon Post quickly but carefully cut away the skin from a deer head using a scalpel at his taxidermy studio in Dubuque. Tools of his trade filled the room set up at his house. Forms in the shape of different game, tables laden with animal skulls, fish hanging from a shelf. I do this for a business, but I want to do the best possible work, said the owner of Post Taxidermy. There's taxidermists and then there's artists. I say I'm more of an artist taxidermist. Post is among multiple local taxidermists, wrapping up one of their busiest seasons of the year as area hunting seasons wind down. For area taxidermists, the drive to practice their trade comes from their own love of hunting and the many stories that come with it. I've always been a hunter and fisherman, said Tom Pregler, who owns Tom's Taxidermy in Dubuque. To me, it was just a natural extension of what I enjoyed doing outside, and it became somewhat of an obsession. Pregler's most common customers' requests are for shoulder mounts of white-tailed deer. To create a mount, Pregler removes the skin from the head of the deer and removes all the meat and muscle before sending the hide to a tannery. Once the tanned hide comes back, he slips it onto a form and glues it in place. He purchases glass eyes and molds them into and form clay. You move the hide and position it so that hopefully it looks alive when you're done, he said. Pregler can make mounts of anything that walks or crawls, though he doesn't do people's pets. White-tailed deer are by far the bulk of what I do, and second to that would be birds and fish, Pregler said. It's based on geography as much as anything, If I was out west, it would be elk and mule deer and that kind of thing. But we're in Iowa, and that's what we hunt here. Post said, completing a mount takes about 13 to 15 hours of hands-on work, but it can take 6 months to a year for customers to receive the final product because of the volume of pieces he has to complete. He averages about 250 pieces each year among deer, birds, fish, and other animals. He said one of the most unusual taxidermy requests he has received was from a customer who asked him to mount a deceased pet zebra. I ended up mounting three zebras for him, Post said. They all passed away of old age. That's one different living in Iowa, trying to do your pet zebras. Jerry Doner, who owns Georgetown Taxidermy near Cuba City, Wisconsin, holds a full-time job and does his taxidermy work when he is at home and on weekends, typically spending about 30 hours a week in the shop. That gives him time to complete about 80 deer mounts a year. In addition to creating taxidermy mounts, he also does his own tanning. I've had a few bad occurrences with tanners, and I trust me, he said, and the most part of the money is in tanning it yourself. Doner said he particularly appreciates the chance to get to know his customers. I just enjoy putting the whitetails back together, recreating the way they look, Doner said. I also enjoy the hunting stories. They're always amazing from the customer. That's probably the biggest thing, the stories. Post's interest in taxidermy started when he was about 10 years old. As a young hunter, he never liked to throw anything away, so his father bought him a kit to mount a squirrel that still hangs above the door in his studio. After finishing high school, he attended a semester of college before he decided instead to go to school to learn the trade of taxidermy. He has now been a full-time taxidermist for 15 years. Anybody can do it, but for it to look real and alive, you've got to be an artist, plain and simple, Post said. He, Pregler, and Doner all said their love of hunting ties in with the things they enjoy about their trade. Being a hunter and fisherman, I like hearing stories and telling the stories and seeing the bucks that come in, Pregler said. It's promotion of the sport for me. He also appreciates the fact that his work, which he does part-time in his retirement, is never boring. If I get tired of mounting deer heads, I'll pull out a raccoon to mount. And if I get tired of doing raccoons and deer, I'll pull out a pheasant or a fish. There's always something different to do, Pregler said. While his customers most often want an animal mounted for its quality or size, many of them have sentimental reasons, too. It's a trophy for them in some way, whether it was their kid's first deer or I was with my dad when I shot that, Pregler said. A trophy is in the eyes of the beholder. We now turn to news from Dubuque and the Tri-States, and we have our update on the COVID virus. 25 new virus cases in Dubuque County, one death in Iowa County. There were few changes in the state of Iowa COVID-19 reported figures Sunday, with 32 new cases in the five-county region in the 24-hour period ending at 5 p.m. Sunday, and no new deaths statewide. Iowa County, Wisconsin did report one additional death Monday. Dubuque County reported 25 additional confirmed COVID cases. The county's 14-day positivity rate edged up slightly to 9.6% as of 5 p.m. Monday. Clayton County reported 4 additional cases and a positivity rate of 13.7%. Delaware County, 2 additional cases, positivity rate inched up to 8%. Jones County reported 1 more case with a positivity rate that dipped to 14.2%. For the second day in a row, Jackson County did not report any additional cases. The county's positivity rate fell to 10%. The state public health department released county-level hospitalization data updated on Sunday, the first time since December 21st. As of Sunday, Dubuque County had 17 residents with COVID-19 hospitalized, a decrease of 5 from 6 days earlier. Clayton County, 5, an increase of 2. Jackson County, 4, an increase of 1. Delaware County, 1, a decrease of 1. Jones County, 1, a decrease of 3. On Monday night, the state still was reporting 6 local long-term care facility outbreaks. At 5 p.m., the case counts at those facilities were Hawkeye Care Center in Dubuque, 42, an increase of 1. Stonehill Care Center in Dubuque, 24 cases. Manor Care Health Services of Dubuque, 23. Ennoble Nursing and Rehab in Dubuque, 10, an increase of 2. Monticello Nursing and Rehab Center, 72. And Guttenberg Care Center, 53. Iowa's statewide total of confirmed cases rose by 894 cases to 275,877. The state reported no change in its death toll, remaining at 3,745. In Wisconsin, Grand County reported 20 new COVID-19 cases Monday. Crawford County reported 4, Lafayette County 6, and none in Iowa County. Statewide, Wisconsin reported 1,335 new cases Monday, pushing the total to 472,153. There were 19 additional related deaths reported, so the state count moved to 4,711. In Illinois, Joe Davies County reported 3 more cases Monday. The Illinois statewide total of cases grew by 4,453, along with 105 additional deaths. That pushed the state's total to 942,362 cases and 16,074 deaths. And now we go to the top of our page of Dubuque and Tri-State News. County funds historical societies. Dubuque County supervisors approved a resolution Monday to allocate $22,000 for area historical societies, 6 months after they usually would have received the funding. The county funds most of these societies each fiscal year. Just like always, these societies sent their applications to the supervisors ahead of the county's deadline to have the budget completed earlier this year. But then, in March, the COVID-19 pandemic hit, and the supervisors never returned to the issue. The new fiscal year started on July 1st. Several weeks ago, some of those smaller historical societies reached out in need of the aid on which they typically depended. "We were closed the first few months," said Jane Beshin of Dyersville Area Historical Society during a recent Board of Supervisors meeting. "Since then, the numbers have been very low, so our funding this year has been reduced. We have an employee who does a fantastic job in our office that does genealogy, who we need to pay." The group also has a museum in what Beshin said is the oldest building in town, which needs regular upkeep. The resolution passed Monday. An amendment to the county's fiscal year 2021 budget provides $720 each for Dyersville Area Historical Society, Epworth Community Historical Society, Farley Area Historical Society, New Vienna Historical Society, and Tri-County Historical Society. It provides $900 to Dubuque County Historic Preservation Commission, whose members are appointed by supervisors. The remaining $17,500 goes to Dubuque County Historical Society, headquartered at National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium. That allocation is down from the $21,000 the group received in fiscal year 2020. It also comes with an expectation that the Dubuque County Historical Society, which has full-time staff, act as a sort of back office for the smaller groups, which that staff agreed to do. The groups also have different expenses. The Epworth organization, for instance, mostly puts out a quarterly newsletter. So the $720 from the county covers the printing and mailing costs for one of those issues, according to Betty Mauser, a member of that group. In general, the county's funding each year means more or less to each individual group based on their activities and realities. That led County Supervisor Ann McDonough to request a more in-depth process for distributing these funds. "How can we do this better?" she asked. There was discussion about creating a committee about looking to see and address what each group's needs are. Those discussions likely will continue in developing the county's budget for fiscal year 2022. But on Monday, she voted for the resolution at hand, along with Supervisors Dan Baker and Jay Wickham, without further discussion. Now we turn to our opinion page, And the letter from the editor, that's Amy Gilligan, and she is the editor at the Telegraph Herald. And her piece is A Twist on First Citizen Tradition, from Amy Gilligan, the Telegraph Herald executive editor. A year ago, we were celebrating the golden anniversary of our iconic Telegraph Herald First Citizen Award. We highlighted all the past winners throughout December, culminating with a keepsake magazine. Then we celebrated with a reception honoring last year's winners, Terry and Paula Friedman, in the 50th year the award has been bestowed. Like all good things, 2020, the next First Citizen event will look a little different. Keeping with tradition, the recipient or recipients of the 2020 Telegraph Herald First Citizen Award will be announced in the January 1st, 2021 edition of the TH. It's a selection that upholds the sterling list of all those who have come before. What's different this time around is we will not be able to host an event with hundreds of people streaming through to share their well wishes and congratulations. Instead, we've come up with a way to have the event safely and still allow the whole community to congratulate the recipient on that day. In partnership with our friends at the Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque, we will publish a keepsake section highlighting the winner and full of greetings from the community members. Once the recipient is named, community members and friends far and wide can go to a designated web link to offer their words of congratulations. We'll publish all those responses January 28th in a special section. Businesses will have an opportunity to purchase congratulatory ads in the commemorative edition as well. Then we'll honor the First Citizen Award recipient with a small event that will be live streamed for all to see. I think the plan provides a good pivot, given the circumstances. The live-streamed event allows the community to hear from the award recipient, and the special section allows the recipient to hear from all those in the community impacted by his or her or their good works. We're excited to bring this opportunity along with the Community Foundation. Watch for all the details in the January 1st paper. Next, images of 2020. It might have seemed like a year nothing happened, but as we have recapped the news of 2020, there have been hundreds of unique and unusual stories. Perhaps never before have we told so many stories of heroism, of courage, of hope, of neighbors helping neighbors. Never before have we seen schools, churches, restaurants, businesses change the way they operate to accommodate the needs of the people they impact. We have told so many of these stories, and many of them we have told with pictures. From high school students in caps and gowns, spaced out and wearing masks, to frontline workers in healthcare, we've photographed 2020, its highlights and its trying moments. On January 7th, readers will receive a 60-page magazine included with your Telegraph Herald, featuring the images of 2020. This edition will showcase the news, sports, and features photos captured by our award-winning photo staff in the past year. Choosing more than 120 photos that encapsulate a year makes for a unique reflection of any given year. And this one is particularly telling. It's a must-have commemorative magazine for anyone who marked a milestone in 2020 and a documentation in real time that local history buffs will appreciate. Watch for the images of 2020 in your January 7th TH. And our third part, access your digital subscription. We're now just 2 weeks away from our transition to printing at Woodward Printing Services in Platteville and going digital only on Monday's edition. If you haven't already been using one or more of the ways to connect electronically with the Telegraph Herald, go to thetelegraphherald.com to check out our website as well as our e-edition, the digital replica of the paper, typically ready by 6 a.m. and often earlier. You can access content through the mobile apps. Go to the App Store or Google Play Store. Newsletters, and on social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. All these digital platforms are accessible wherever you go and whenever you want. They are already included in your subscription rate. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns related to the news delivery method, please give us a call at 800-562-1825 or email us at customerservice@themthmedia.com. We will do everything possible to ensure your satisfaction and assist you with the transition to the digital issue on Mondays. Now we have two letters to the editor, and our first one is Schools, Parents Must Challenge Students in Choosing Courses, from David H. Patton, Graham Circle, Dubuque. I cannot, no, I will not, accept the rationale that the best way to get more students to sign up for both higher level math and science classes is to build a culture where students feel comfortable, as well as knowing that they can, will be successful. See, when I was at Coggin Community, now North Lynn, in 8th grade back in the 60s, I was told if I expected to go on to a four-year college, I needed to take specific math, science, and language arts courses. The same was true when I transferred to Manchester, West Delaware. They then set up a four-year plan, a schedule that I was not only expected to follow, but would address my educational needs. Unfortunately, today, parents as well as Dubuque schools are not encouraging students to look to the future to show how all this can benefit them down the road. Instead, too many are living only for the moment, wondering how the present coursework can benefit them right now. We also know it is human nature to take the easiest path to reach a goal, in this case, graduate from high school. So why would anyone want to sign up for challenging classes if there is an easier way to attain the same objective? This also means if there is a course offered in basket weaving that would satisfy the math requirement to graduate, you can bet many others will be joining me in signing up for it. Our second of three, actually, letters. Nonprofits, Individuals Doing God's Work, from Rod Bakey, Karen Street, Dubuque. Here in Dubuque, in many area communities around Iowa and across the nation, there are so many great groups and organizations helping the less fortunate and needy. As a board member of the Dubuque Rescue Mission, I have witnessed the real concern for those who need help, whether for a meal, an overnight stay, or a kind word. This is duplicated all over our community. This year has been a challenge, but many have risen to the challenge and will not end at any time soon. As Jesus has said, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me. Let's all join the pursuit of not only helping our neighbor, but loving them. And our third letter? T.H. First Citizen, A Great Tradition. Richard R. Ryder, Sycamore Avenue, Marshfield, Wisconsin. It's that time of year again when some deserving T.H. or tri-state resident will be named the recipient of the 2020 Telegraph Herald First Citizen Award. The only downside to this award is that you have to select one person. As Monsignor Francis P. Friedel, 2008 TH First Citizen, said in 2008, "From the moment I arrived in Dubuque, I have been in love with this city, its citizens, its institutions. As a former Dubuquer, that sums up my feelings for my hometown. I remember and savor past First Citizens, and I look forward to the new and future First Citizens." You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. This is Ken, and we have been reading from the Tuesday, December 29th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And we will now turn to today's obituaries. Marguerite L. Fiberberg. Marguerite L. Hilken Fiberberg, 90, of Bethany Home, Dubuque, peacefully went to heaven on Thursday, December 24th, surrounded by her loving family. A private family mass of Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, December 30th, at St. Columbkill Catholic Church, with Father David Schatz officiating. Burial will follow at Mount Olivet Cemetery. The service will be live-streamed on the Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory Facebook page. Peg was born on August 10, 1930, in Dubuque, the daughter of John and Camille O'Hay Hilken. She grew up in Dubuque, attending St. Columbkill Grade School and High School. She met the love of her life, Melvin Fiberberg, whom she married on April 9, 1952. He preceded her in death on September 5, 2015. Together, they built their forever home on Oak Street, where they raised their six children. Peg's greatest joy was spending time with family and friends. She enjoyed cooking and was best known for her turkey and dressing, homemade cinnamon rolls and breads. She enjoyed reading, music, Hallmark movies, celebrating holidays, and was always ready for a game of euchre. She will always be remembered as a loving wife, sister, mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, and friend. Family was first, and Peg's children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren were the pride and joy of her life. Her legacy of religious faith, love of family, education, and determination will live on through them. Her life, a precious gift, is one we will always treasure. A Marguerite Peg Fiberberg Memorial Fund has been established. Francis J. Steffen, Platteville. The Reverend Francis J. Steffen, 89, of Platteville, died Monday, December 28th. Visitation will be held from 9 to 10:45 Thursday, December 31st, at St. Mary Church in Platteville, where a mass of Christian burial will be held at 11 a.m. Burial will be in Calvary Cemetery in Platteville. Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Cuba City is assisting the family. Gerald J. McCarthy, Bernard. Gerald J. McCarthy, 81, of Bernard, Iowa, passed away Sunday, December 27th at the Iowa Vets Home in Marshalltown, Iowa. Visitation for Gerald will be held from 12:30 to 1:30 Wednesday, December 30th at the Rife Funeral Home in Cascade. In compliance with the CDC guidelines, social distancing will be observed and masks worn. A massive Christian burial will be held for Gerald at 2 p.m. Wednesday at Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Fillmore, with Reverend Mark Osterhaus presiding. Burial will be held in Sacred Heart Cemetery with full military honors accorded by the Cascade American Legion Post No. 528. Gerald was born July 18, 1939, in Bernard, Iowa, son of Joseph L. and Agnes Otting McCarthy. He farmed in the rural Bernard Fillmore area. He is an Army veteran, a member of the Cascade American Legion Post 528, and a member of Sacred Heart Parish in Fillmore. George C. LeMay, Worthington. George C. Moose LeMay, 72, of Worthington, passed away peacefully at home Saturday, December 26th, after a three-year battle with PCOMA cancer. A private funeral service will be held where military honors will be performed by American Legion Post No. 137. George was born November 4, 1948, at Lake Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio, Texas, the son of Theodore and Emma Brown LeMay. He was raised in Green Bay, Wisconsin, until his family moved to Worthington. He married Linda Fettketter on June 28, 1975, in Epworth. George enlisted to serve his country in the U.S. Marine Corps during the Vietnam War. He was wounded in battle and was proud to have been awarded the Purple Heart. He worked construction for many years, erecting pole buildings for Luttke Construction in Nebraska. He worked for Olberding Construction in Dyersville for over 20 years before he formed his own construction company in 1994 and retired in 2012. He was a past member and president of the Worthington Sportsman Club, Worthington JCs, member of the American Legion Post No. 137 for 51 years, and the Disabled Veterans. He loved spending time with his children and grandchildren. He was an avid fisherman and enjoyed his trips to Guttenberg, Canada, and North Dakota. He enjoyed sharing a toddy at the local bar with his friends. Memorials may be made to American Legion Post No. 137 in Dyersville or Mercy Autism Center in Dubuque. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.kramerfuneral.com. Charles R. Breitbach, 78, of Dubuque, died Saturday, December 26th. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, January 2nd at St. Columbkill Catholic Church in Dubuque, where a funeral mass will be held at 11 a.m. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory of Dubuque is assisting the family. Patricia M. Weaver, Bagley, Wisconsin. Patricia M. Weaver, 86, of Bagley, died Sunday, December 27th. No services will be held. Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory of Bloomington is assisting the family. Betsy M. Conter, Piasta. Betsy M. Conter, 44, of Piasta, died Monday, December 28th. Rife Funeral Home of Cascade is assisting the family. Wayne W. Wallers. Wayne W. Wallers, 80, of Dubuque, passed away Sunday, December 27th. Services will be at 11 a.m. Thursday, December 31st, at Eaglehoff, Stegert & Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road, Dubuque, where friends may greet the family from 9:30 a.m. until the time of the service. Reverend Derek Rosenstiel will officiate. Services will be live streamed on the Eaglehoff, Stegert & Casper Funeral Home page, Facebook page. The family understands if you are unable to attend in person. Internment will be at Dubuque Memorial Gardens Cemetery, where military honors will be accorded by the Bellevue American Legion Post 237. Condolences and memories may be shared at www.eaglehoffstegertcasper.com. Wayne was born August 10th, 1940, in Bellevue, Iowa, the son of Ralph and Lulu Wiegert Wollers. He graduated from Andrew High School. Wayne was married Betty Anderson on August 20th, 1966, in Sparta, Wisconsin. They adopted two wonderful children, Bill and Annette. He was employed with the Dubuque Packing Company for over 30 years and later worked for Hawkeye Care Center. Wayne served in the Army Reserves for 6 years and for 20 years in the National Guard with the 1st Battalion, 133rd. He was a member of the Bellevue American Legion Post 273. Wayne loved to go fishing, hunting, and camping. He was an avid NASCAR fan, and he enjoyed helping his uncle Eldon on the farm. Wayne was a great talker who loved visiting with people. He loved being with his family and will be sadly missed. Memorials may be made to the family for later donations to Wayne's favorite charities. Michelle M. Donar, Bloomington, Wisconsin. Michelle M. Donar, 59, of Bloomington, died Thursday, December 24th. There will be no service at this time. Larson Funeral Family Funeral Home of Fenimore is assisting the family. Richard F. Hunek, Bellevue. Richard F. Hunek, 90, of Bellevue, died Sunday, December 27th. Private services will be held. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory of Dubuque is assisting the family. Dorothy M. Elgin, Farley. Dorothy M. Elgin, 88, of Farley, died Monday, December 28th. Rife Funeral Home of Farley is assisting the family. Timothy D. Gillenwater. Timothy D. Gillenwater, 57, of Dubuque, died on Wednesday, December 2nd. Private family services were held at Bear Funeral Home of Dubuque. Gary D. Red, Cuba City. Gary D. Red, 70, of Cuba City, Wisconsin, passed away Monday, December 28th at Manor Care Health Services in Dubuque. A public visitation with COVID-19 guidelines implemented will be held Thursday, December 31st, from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Howden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cuba City. His family will not be in attendance during the visitation. A private family graveside service with military honors accorded will be held at a later date. The Howden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cuba City is serving the family. Gary was born February 25th, 1950, to William and Marion Bastian in Galena, Illinois. He was a U.S. Army veteran serving from 1970 to 72 during Vietnam. Gary married Lynn Wright on May 2nd, 1970, at Faith Lutheran Church in Cuba City. He worked for over 50 years as a route technician for Tri-State Music, Williamson Music, and Stansfield Vending. He was a member of the Cuba City VFW Post 8318, Cuba City JCs, Cuba City Lions Club, Coal Acres, and a Euchre card team. Gary enjoyed golfing, camping, annual trips to Florida, rides around the tri-states in his convertible, attending his grandkids' activities, and was an avid Wisconsin Badgers, Green Bay Packers, and Milwaukee Brewers fan. But most of all, he enjoyed time spent with his family and friends. He will be sadly missed by all who knew and loved him. In lieu of plants and flowers, a Gary Red Memorial Fund has been established. Memorials may be mailed to Howden Shield Funeral Home, care of Gary Red Family, Box 2825, Cuba City, Wisconsin, 53807. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.howdenshieldfuneralhome.com. Fern D. Lowe, Hazel Green, Wisconsin. Fern D. Lowe, 79, of Hazel Green, Wisconsin, passed away Saturday, December 26th at her home, surrounded by her family. Due to COVID-19, there will be no services. The Howden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Cuba City, Wisconsin, is serving the family. Fern was born February 14, 1941, to Albert and Clara Welk Whitmire in Willow City, North Dakota. She was a 1959 graduate from Willow City High School in Willow City, North Dakota. She married Nihlus Lowe September 12, 1970, in Webster, South Dakota. Fern enjoyed gardening, making wreaths, playing games, watching TV, helping her husband and her grandkids, took a huge part in her personal interests. She always put her family first. She will be sadly missed by all who knew and loved her. In lieu of flowers and plants, a Fern Lowe Memorial Fund has been established. Memorials may be mailed to Howden Shield Funeral Home, care of Fern Lowe Family, Box 825, Cuba City, Wisconsin, 53807. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.howdenshieldfuneralhome.com. Kenneth R. Hoftender, East Moline. Kenneth R. Hoftender, 83, of East Moline, formerly of Milan, passed away Saturday, December 26th, at Hope Creek Care Center, East Moline. A massive Christian burial will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, January 2nd, at St. Ambrose Catholic Church, Milan. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to service at the church. Visitors will be required to wear a face mask and practice social distancing. Memorials may be made to St. Jude's Children's Hospital. Whelan Presley Funeral Home and Crematory, Milan, is assisting the family with services. Kenneth was born March 12, 1937, in Dubuque, Iowa, the son of Raymond and Marcella Oppenhaver Hoftender. He married Frederica Lanham on July 5, 1958, in East Dubuque, Illinois. Kenneth worked at John Deere and Company for 43 years in clerical management. He enjoyed traveling and playing golf. Kenneth was an avid Chicago Cubs and Chicago Bears fan. He loved spending time with his family and watching all his children and grandchildren play sports and playing card games. Online condolences may be left to Kenneth's family at www.wheelinpresley.com. Teresa Ciccarelli. Teresa Marie Ciccarelli, 80, died Sunday, December 27th, 2020, Stonehill Care Center, Dubuque, due to Alzheimer's dementia. A funeral mass will be celebrated Thursday, December 31st, at 10 a.m. rather, at St. Raphael Cathedral, Monsignor Tom Toiley presiding. Friends may greet the family from 9 a.m. until the time of Mass at the church on Thursday. Guests may park in the lot at the back of the church and enter through the parish center. Mass will be live streamed on the Cathedral of St. Raphael and St. Patrick Church YouTube page. Burial will be at Mount Olivet Cemetery. Visitation will be from 3:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. Wednesday, December 30th at Eaglehoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road, Dubuque. Masks and social distancing are required at the church and funeral home. Condolences and memories may be shared at www.eaglehoffsiegertcasper.com, where a link to the live stream is also available under the service details in Terry's obituary. Terry was born July 20, 1940, in Edgerly, North Dakota, the daughter of Kimball and Ivata Schmidt Murray. She married Dr. Frank Ciccarelli on May 11, 1963, in Edgerly, North Dakota, and in June 1963, graduated from St. Teresa's College, Winona, Minnesota, with a B.S. degree in nursing. Immediately after graduation, she was appointed to a team leader position in the psychiatric unit of St. Mary's Hospital, Rochester, Minnesota, working with Mayo Clinic physicians. In 1965, she and her family moved to Springfield, Illinois, before moving permanently to Dubuque in 1966. Terry's spiritual values, confident initiative, and engaging attitude propelled her many interests and commitments, which mainly included service to family, friends, and neighbors, and community at large. While remaining devoted to her immediate family, she helped several elderly or ill neighbors, cared for several of the First Hospice of Dubuque patients, volunteered as a literacy mentor, and was active on church social outreach committees. She was a member of the League of Women Voters, served on the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra Board, and 14 years on the Dubuque Zoning Board of Adjustment, including a term, as chairperson. With an innate aesthetic sensitivity, Terry pursued a love of art, architecture, literature, music, and dance. She had an ear for and loved every kind of music, from dancing to the polka bands in the beloved North Dakota of her youth, to attendance at many performances of live opera in later life. Her crush on Elvis as a teen in the 50s never went away. During a span of 50 years, the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra concerts she missed can be counted on one hand. She loved it all. Rock, jazz, folk, reggae, country, blues, R&B, swing, classical, opera. Reading and writing often carried her through the night into early morning. On top of her many artistic interests, Terry was also an avid fan of professional tennis and auto racing. Go figure. Preferences for memorial contributions are St. Raphael Cathedral, Hospice of Dubuque, or Dubuque Symphony Orchestra. Mary Ann A. Dayton, Scales Mound. Mary Ann A. McLean Dayton, 85, passed away peacefully on Saturday, December 26, surrounded by her loving family at Swedish American Hospital, Rockford. Mary Ann was born in Bernard, Iowa, January 17, 1935, to Michael and Julia Donovan McLean. Marion married Robert Dayton on July 17, 1967, in Galena. Marianne was a homemaker and worked for Atwood Industries. She loved spending time with all her kids, grandkids, and great-grandkids, as well as her family and friends. There will be a private family service on Thursday, December 31st, followed by a massive Christian burial at the Holy Trinity Catholic Church in Scales Mound, with Father Howard Bark officiating. Burial will be in Holy Trinity Cemetery. Due to the COVID-19 virus, masks and social distancing are required. In lieu of flowers, a Marion A. Dayton Memorial Fund has been established. Gene L. Kiefer. Gene L. Kiefer, 87, of Dubuque, died Sunday, December 27th at a Noble Skilled Nursing and Rehabilitation. Private family services are being held today in Mount Calvary Cemetery. Gene was born 1933, daughter of Clarence and Grace Trudy Dirksen of Dubuque. She resided in Dubuque all her life. She attended St. Anthony Grade School and was a graduate of St. Joseph Academy. She was a member of St. Anthony Parish and Rosary Society, as well as the St. Jude's Circle. Jean was a stenographer at John Deere Dubuque Works in the 1950s, where she met Merle, and they were married in 1957. She served as a volunteer for many years at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center, alongside her niece, Linda Wiskus, and enjoyed walking the halls, seeing people she knew while delivering flowers and gifts. Jean had many close friends and enjoyed participating in card games and riding bikes. Jean was a loving and caring mother to her three sons. The highlight of her summers was when her grandchildren would stay with her for a week of fun, which included swimming, the water parks, and miniature golfing. Mary F. Brady. Mary F. Brady, 86, of Dubuque, died Saturday, December 26th at her home. A private funeral service for Mary will be 1 p.m. Wednesday, December 30th at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Service, with Deacon Mike Ellis officiating. Burial will be in Arlington National Cemetery, Arlington, Virginia. The service will be live streamed on Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home's Facebook page. Mary was born October 8th, 1934, in Cuba City, Wisconsin, the daughter of Edward and Imelda Banfield Ault. She married John Jack Brady. He preceded her in death May 12, 1981. She received her master's degree from the University of California. She was employed as an instructor for the Department of Defense schools for 37 years with the United States government. This brings us to the end of our reading of the Tuesday, December 29th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, brought to you as always by IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. This has been Ken sitting in on Tuesday. You'll hear again from me on my regular slot on Friday. Till then, be safe, be careful.